Hey, this is Nick Gelso, co-owner and founder of CLNS Radio. Today's podcast is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is the home of expert video tutorials. Because you're such a loyal listener of CLNS Radio, and it's 2015, you want to kick the new year off in style, claim your free trial today from CLNS by going to Lynda.com/CLNS. That's LYNDA.com/CLNS. Now on to your regularly scheduled program.
Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, banks it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner. Got another one.
Now let's get it started.
Well, in game number 73 for the Boston Celtics against the Los Angeles Clippers, it turned into a bloodbath early, and then late, the Celtics decided to show up. To use a party analogy, Celtics decided to show up about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning to the party, and the hosts of the party were like, bro, the party's over. Unfortunately, the Celtics made enough wrath where the Celtics had to they had to make it somewhat of a game. But from the get-go, this was an absolute domination fest. The Clippers came in winning 7 in a row. They had won their previous couple of games over some crummy teams in the Eastern Conference, and the Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers. A locked team, 49-25 now in the West Coast, in the Western Conference. You talk about just sheer annihilation in a 119-104 victory for the Los Angeles Clippers. Sorry, 119-106 victory over the Boston Celtics tonight in the Garden, the TD Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome on into the Boston Celtics postgame show. If you'd like to call on in, the phone number again, as you heard at the top of the show, is 347-215-7771. We will get into some parts of this game. There was a lack of effort and attention and intensity, and I'll get to some examples here throughout the breakdown of the game. I did not turn into the game until about late in the first half. It did look like I didn't really need to tune in at all. But I did see some examples of a lack of attention, lack of effort, lack of intensity. It was pathetic. It was, just to put it one word, it was pathetic. And from a fan perspective watching this game, it was absolutely brutal. And it was brutal from many perspectives. Perspective on the professional level of watching this game. Again, at one point it was 92-57, and the Celtics were down 35 points with about 5 minutes left in the third quarter. I mean, it was that bad, and there were a couple plays that were just embarrassing. Just clear lack of attention, clear lack of focus. There was nothing there. I mean, it was almost as if it was like more eyes were on the NCAA tournament, which, I mean, not to, a lot. Many eyes are not on the world of the NBA right now, as we know. They're on the eyes of the NCAA tournament. The problem is that this game showed that it's not just the fans not watching sports, but not watching the NBA, but it's also the players. And from this perspective, I know the Clippers are far more talented than the Boston Celtics. We all know that. If you have a common brain, you understand that, and you understand that this Celtics team does not have the talent level to match up with the Clippers in general, but at the same time, they can put together an effort, which they made late in the game. If you watched this game late, if you found a way to turn it on when the Celtics were down by about 10, 11 points late in the game, you saw that they can put an effort forth and make it a game if they wanted to. When you're down 35, you're simply not trying. I don't care what the discrepancy is in talent. I don't care what, who's better and what, and the matchup's disparaging, whatever. At some point, it comes down to you focusing and at least trying to make it a game. It really does. It turns into that where it's like, hey, you just turn it on a little bit, try and focus, and don't just
that thing sucks!
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's been, I mean, just...
And thing sucks!
Exactly. Like, I mean, I don't know how much further I need to go with this, but it's getting to the point now where it's like, wow. I mean, when guys aren't focusing, which seems to be the case a lot in the NBA, because
we're talking
like
about practice, man.
Right, Iverson, you're right, man. Like, is anyone really even focusing on game film? Is anyone watching the game film? Like, I honestly think since the last time, because there's no excuse. It's not like this is a back-to-back game. The Celtics didn't play a game on Saturday. You know, if they were playing a game on Saturday night, I'd understand the tiresome. It is late in the year, people. People, we are coming down the stretch here in the NBA. We have about 2+ weeks left until we see postseason basketball. 3 weeks from today, there will be postseason basketball on your television. And I get it. Guys are completely run down with the talent level in the NBA, with how hard these guys play, practice, just the intensity. I get it. I get that we're getting to that point. But it also comes to a point of professionalism where, hey, we know that eyes aren't being put on the television screen to watch this, you know, the Celtics brand basketball. Granted, they're a very low, mid-level Eastern Conference team. Yes, they're fighting for a playoff. For a playoff spot, and this team came out and played as if they hadn't watched film in 2 or 3 days. I would have bought a ticket to this game. I would be absolutely furious. And if you want to call in 347-215-7771, if you went to the game tonight, if you've been to Celtics games throughout the year, please call in. I'll get to your calls as soon as possible. Again, I was watching some Elite Eight games until I tuned into this one. And I might as well not tune in. We get 68-47 at halftime. We'll pick it up there late in the first half. 34 points for both quarters for the Los Angeles Clippers here in the first and second quarter. But again, 68-47 at halftime. J.J. Redick, 8 of 11 from the field, 3 of 4 from the three-point land, 19 points at the end of the first half. DeAndre Jordan looked like Dwight Howard from about 5, 6, 7 years ago in the dunk contest. You might as well put a cape on him. CP3 was just throwing up lobs like it was, you know, like it was nothing. No big deal. You know, just, you know, ho-hum, walk in the park and in the garden where, you know, there's about 18 banners, 17 banners. There's championships for days. That's all they put up in Boston. And there's guys flying around like they're in Ninja Turtles. Not that the Clippers aren't in Ninja Turtles. But you see where I'm coming from on this? And so from that perspective, it's absolutely frustrating to see this kind of thing happen in the garden. It's embarrassing. Chris Paul had 7 assists at half. And little Isaiah Thomas from the Boston Celtics, who was the one guy, first of all, pride and joy from the 253 here out in Tacoma, 15 points. That was what it was like at halftime. In the third quarter, it got up to, like I said, 92-57, 35-point deficit. Just, I don't even know. Again, it's just like, really, this is what's happening. Was there any kind of preparation for this game? Are they really trying to get into the postseason? Is Brad Stevens really making the effort? What's going on here in Celtics land? Heading into the fourth, the Clippers were up 105-79. Marcus Smart shot an air ball. And then all of a sudden, the Celtics decided, oh, hey, guess what? We are in a playoff race. Oh, wait a minute. So now that the Clippers are putting in their fourth stringers, they might as well have brought guys with suits on at the end of the third quarter, take their suits off, put on a pair of shorts, and go out and just play basketball. That's pretty much what happened. And then the Celtics were like, oh, yeah, now we can finally take advantage of the bench. 18-4 run. They were down 111-100 with about in the game. They go to the hack of Jordan, and it became a game. It really did. It became a game. And that was when the Clippers' talent, again, prevailed. So from that perspective, it's amazing. So we got Mike Bird Munger on the air. Mike, how's it going, man? Mike there?
Hello.
Hey, what's up, Mike? How's it going?
Nah, this is Franco from San Francisco.
Franco from San Francisco. Franco, how you doing? My apologies. I'm supposed to have a co-host on with me right now, but I got Franco. Franco, did you watch this game tonight? What are your thoughts on this game tonight?
I would have had a heart attack, too. I would have had a heart attack too. They would have had to pull me out on the stretcher if I had to.
Do you see what I'm saying? You saw that guy, that fan in the front row there? Yeah, I don't know. If you weren't watching this game, there was this old person, he was either a medical staff, he was either part of the team or whatnot. Guy had to be taken off on a stretcher. I didn't see what happened, honestly. I was kind of busy funneling, getting this show ready. And the next thing I know, there's a guy in the crowd who had to be taken to the hospital. I mean, you talk about a lack of effort and just play by the Celtics. I mean, this guy, he's probably seen enough Celtics games where he's like, wow, this is what it's getting to in the NBA. It's getting to the point where when games aren't nationally televised and when it's late in the year and when it's all economical, they're just playing at the minimalist level that they possibly can, unfortunately. And the saddest part is they're in the middle of a playoff chase. There's a huge game tomorrow for the Boston Celtics at Charlotte, 7 p.m. tomorrow. If you want to watch it, seriously, tune in and watch it because I hope they show up. Because tonight it was an absolute joke. I mean, isn't that true, Mike? I mean, come on now.
Franco, but yeah, he gave up on life.
Franco,
right there.
I'm sorry. Goodness, good Lord.
the bad shooting was from the beginning. I don't know why Brad Stevens didn't start calling timeouts right away and tell Marcus Smart to handcuff himself to Red X's hip. He's like one of the only dudes that really streaks out besides Crawford, and then later on a third level is what's his name, Barnes. But like that's their main shooter. And you start him getting off, and you don't like handcuff somebody on him or call a bunch of timeouts. And then yeah, they did come back in, and then like the officials wouldn't let them though. I don't know how many times Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas have to hit the ground before somebody gets some kind of love. Like, I think right after that Marcus Smart got slammed to the ground, that's when the dude had a heart attack. He's probably so mad at the officials too for some of the corny calls they were calling, non calls they were calling. That Luigi dude when he made that strip, you know, like that was a clean strip and they called that foul. It was some bad officiating too, and the old man just gave up on life. He said it's too much for me to handle. He's getting too excited.
At the end of the day,
we're talking
too.
About practice, man.
At the end of the day, too, yes, I would say there was some poor officiating, Franco. There was some poor officiating as well. But at the end of the day, if you're not going to make the effort, I mean, here's my example that I was going to give during the game that I saw that all I needed, this is all I needed to know. If you were watching the live podcast, if you're watching the live game through the Celtics TV radio or TV show thing that they have there in Boston, all you had to see this was this. After they had, there was a missed free throw. There was a post free throw play where CP3 ran down the court before the free throw was even shot. Before the free throw for the Boston Celtics was even shot, CP3 had lined up on the block down low. And what happens? JJ Redick runs down there with him, and there's a cross court pass to CP3. CP3 runs up, runs a quick screen to JJ Redick. Boom, 2 points. That right there is all you need to know about what happened in this game and the intensity and the focus that was there. There was none. There's absolutely none. And it blows my mind to know that these guys had 2 days to prepare as professional athletes making millions of dollars, seeing them completely just give up on certain plays throughout the game. And I agree with you. There was some seriously poor officiating in this game, and I believe it was mostly towards the Celtics' way. But at the same time, and it goes –
it was at the end. And you're right. And you're right about the effort. I just don't know what did Brad Stevens tell him at halftime? Did he not throw enough chairs? Did he not, like smash a couple of those peanut butter jelly sandwiches they got over there enough? Like, what did he? Because they came out like worse than the second quarter. Because the second quarter they at least scored more than 30 points. And then toward the end is when they started kicking back up. Like you said, I mean, it was. I was actually thinking they might actually get this close. I've seen what they've done with the Warriors twice. And a lot of other games where they hold it down to like two, it's like a one possession game when it comes to the end, and they get beat out like that. But the effort at the beginning was just like, but this has been a problem, right? They get beat up on the first quarters every game now.
I mean, they get beat up on the first quarter, but I mean, they got beat up throughout the entire first half. I mean, Brad Stevens to throw chairs, 48-46. You give up 68 points. That all by itself is a lack of effort. We got Mike Munger on here. Franco, I'm going to let you go, okay, sir? Thank you for calling in.
Oh, no worries.
No problem. Thank you so much. What's up? What's up, Mike? How you doing, man?
I'm good. Sorry it took me a little longer, but for some reason my phone sometimes wants to work and sometimes it doesn't. So I've been trying to call in for the last 20 minutes.
It sounds like the Celtics. Sounds like the Celtics' performance tonight. Sounds like they wanted to work, and sometimes they didn't want to work. It's kind of the same thing tonight. And also, kind of like you were saying, out wanted to work. Well, they decided to work tonight about 5 minutes you know, left in the ball game. Oh, hey, we actually do have a chance to win. I don't know if you watched this game tonight, Mike. What are your thoughts on the game? I mean, I pretty much broke it down. A 119-106 loss to the Los Angeles Clippers, their final game against the West Coast opponent in the Los Angeles Clippers, who have now won 8 in a row. Again, closing out a 3-game East Coast annihilation and a 111-80 win over the New York Knicks in Madison Square Garden, 119-98 domination fest over the Philadelphia 76ers, and then tonight, 119-106 over the Boston Celtics. What did you see tonight, Mike?
Well, I mean, the Clippers were a contender, and we're not. I mean, yeah, you don't want to sit there and completely criticize everything, because I think there was some effort tonight. But
right.
When the other team plays with effort and they have twice the amount of talent that you do, and some of that talent is, you know, all NBA caliber players or just, you know, the perfect system guys that have been playing together for a while, unless you play absolutely perfect, flawless basketball, you're looking at a recipe for disaster. I mean, what, they give up 13 three-pointers tonight? You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, if you know that they're going to run the old Celtics Ray Allen play for J.J. Redick, and you know that Avery Bradley's going to have to run through 3, sometimes 4 screens, then do something and help off of him. Because you know what? You know, in all honesty, I would rather give up DeAndre Jordan going to the basket within 5 feet than give up a Redick 3. Because at least you still have that 1-point difference that's not going to hurt you. So there's too often tonight we saw J.J. Redick being wide open.
Wouldn't you know that, though? Like, right. That comes down to effort, though. Like, at the end of the day, wouldn't you know that if your team is not talented enough? Because there is a way to beat this Clippers team. Yes, the talent is definitely disparaging. DeAndre Jordan is way better than most players is better than all the big men on that Celtics team. Blake Griffin by himself can probably beat the Celtics if he played 1-on-5. I mean, legitimately, he probably could. And then you got a guy in Chris Paul who can make everyone look like superstars because that's just the kind of player he is. But at the end of the day, there is a recipe to beat this team. Yes, the J.J. Redick, and that's all you needed. That's all I needed to know when I looked at the halftime stats. J.J. Redick, 8-for-11 from the floor, 3-of-4 from 3, 19 points. That's all I needed to know. That was the difference in the ball game. You stop J.J. Redick, you put Avery Bradley or your best defender on a guy like J.J. Redick, and you find a way to get him to shut him down. You focus on those outside perimeter shooters. Give DeAndre Jordan the ball all day. What are you going to do? You're going to let DeAndre Jordan shoot free throws all day, or are you going to let guys from the outside beat you? It's just, to me, it's common sense, and it's focusing in on what is the strength of how to beat a certain team. And if you're not doing that as a coach, you're not doing that as team and professional athletes, you're not noticing that, what are you doing? Get J.J. Redick away from his comfort zone, which is getting off screens and all that. Play zone to some sort. Play perimeter defense. Get it going. And the moment they throw the ball into DeAndre Jordan, or shoot, even Blake Griffin's been a little shoddy from the line from time to time, hack him. Make DeAndre Jordan shoot 50 free throws in this ballgame. Make Blake Griffin shoot 30 free throws in this ballgame. Do you see what I'm saying? Play that perimeter defense. And if you can play that perimeter defense, yes, it's tough to come off screens, and it's tough. I get it. I get there's a system in place where it makes it difficult. But understand that let the inside plays happen with the big men, and don't let it happen on the outside. That right there would have cut the score to about 109, maybe 109-106. It would have been an actual ball game late instead of, you know, a 10-point deficit. When, you know, and granted, the whole scenario would have been different in the third quarter because it was a 30-point blowout by that point in the third quarter. Granted, I understand talent is way different, but there is a key to beat this Clippers team. I mean, you can be an average team, and you know that DeAndre Jordan only shoots maybe 40% from the free throw line, and that Blake Griffin is a 70% free throw shooter. There is a key, and I understand the talent isn't there, but at the same time, there is a way to compete and to make it entertaining and to make it a close conversational type game to have. This was an absolute annihilation. And I get where you're coming from, and I totally see it. But it's still, at the same time, it's like, come on, guys. 35, I mean, come on. I saw it 92-57 in the third quarter. That's just not showing up. I mean, at the end of the day, when you're down 35 in the NBA, and yes, I get it. And if it was, if the Celtics had played a game last night against a team like, you know, teams that are in it right now, like Brooklyn, Indiana, Charlotte, maybe even Detroit or Miami, if they were playing a game like that last night, on like a big time stage, you know, there's only 10 games left, 9 games left in the regular season. If they would have played a game like that last night and showed up the way they did tonight, I'd be all on board for that. I'd be like, hey, you're asking to get annihilated playing in a back-to-back situation, playing a team like the Los Angeles Clippers, playing a team that we know is far more talented, far just all they need to do is show up, get out of bed, and they can beat the Celtics. I mean, it would be a tough game, but they could beat the Celtics. But if the Celtics last night would have played, like I said, one of those teams that are in the race right now for an 8th, 7th seed in the Eastern Conference, yes, I would understand the lack of talent. I would understand not the lack of talent. I would understand the lack of intensity, the lack of, you know, of being there and being focused. I would see that, and I could understand that, especially with a team like the Clippers. But the last time they played was against the Knicks on Friday. I mean, this Boston Celtics team, they're 5th in the NBA in assists. That's no joke. Like, that is – think about the teams in the NBA that are where they're at right now. You got the Mavericks, you got the Spurs, Grizzlies, Thunder. You got all these the Rockets, these great Western Conference teams, and then you've got a couple of teams stacked up at the top in the Eastern Conference, and the Celtics are 5th in the NBA in assists. That right there shows that this team, yes, there are, as we all know as Celtics fans, we understand. I mean, you guys understand that this is you understand that there's still not a go-to guy for this team. Yes, they're making one and possibly Isaiah Thomas, but as we know, there needs to be maybe one more guy. But the point is, we understand that there's still a process being played out. But at the same time, when you're 5th in the NBA in assists and you are battling for a playoff spot and the last team you played was the New York Knicks on Friday, 2 nights ago, and granted, it's late in the year, and I get being tired. I understand everyone's tired this time of year. We're down the stretch in the NBA. I get it. At the same time, being down 35 in the third quarter, there's a reason why there was a heart attack a couple seats back of that bench, of one of the benches in that game tonight. And there's just a reason. And that's just what – it was rough watching this game and then seeing it come down to the end where the Clippers pretty much just kind of mailed it in late there in the last 10 minutes of the game. And, yes, the Celtics made some plays. They got some guys off the bench that don't see very much time during the season, and they came in and they performed and they played like professionals. They played the way they're supposed to play as professionals, and they found a way to get. But that could have been the case earlier on, and it could have been the case throughout. But it still irks me a little bit to see that. But still, there's still time. There's 9 games left in the regular season, and if you'd like to call into the show. The show is 347-215-7771. Real quickly, Mike, what is your take? I mean, again, what was your take on what's been your take on the Celtics over the past couple of months? I haven't been on the postgame show. My name is Chris Morrison, by the way. I do my own show on the Hooper's Log. I think the last postgame show I did was about two, three weeks ago. I did a postgame show on a Saturday night, I believe. But anyway, what was your take? What's been your take on the Celtics over the last couple of weeks? I've been focusing more on March Madness and what's been going on in the college game. What have you seen from the Celtics so far?
Well, I mean, the biggest problem is these last few weeks they've been an up-and-down team. The game against Miami at home, no Wade, no Whiteside. They absolutely should have went out there and absolutely demolished that bunch of scrubs, and for some reason they just didn't show up. Even the other night against the Knicks, they struggled to beat a really bad Knicks team. You can understand them. You're losing to the Spurs. The Spurs are the class of the NBA. But against Oklahoma City, they should have won that game. I mean, they're inconsistent right now. And again, you don't want to make a lot of excuses because they are NBA players. However, you also don't want to get too emotional over it because they are such a young team. Like you just said, they really don't have a go-to guy. Isaiah Thomas was out for a little while, so he's just coming back, trying to develop a rhythm. It's just inconsistency. There are some things where you see plays that are drawn up and it looks like an amazing play and Brad Stevens just, looks like a genius. And other times like tonight where, you allow J.J. Redick to run off numerous screen after numerous screen and, get wide open as opposed to just letting the inside guys attack us, then that's where you could see his inexperience as a coach. I mean, tonight was one of those things where Doc Rivers proved he was the better coach. The Clippers proved they were a better team, and they proved that they have, a better system than we do right now. They have go-to guys, they have star-caliber players, and we don't. I mean, that's the biggest thing I see with this team right now, is that we don't have one standout player that's going to step up and take over games. I mean, we have guys that could, you know, a couple of guys potentially do that, guys that have done that for us from time to time, but we don't have that one guy, you know, Isaiah Thomas included, we don't have that one guy that's just going to come in and take over, and you give him the ball, get the hell out of the way. We don't have that one guy. So, you know, between that and just, you know, I mean, they play hard every night, if anything. You give them credit, but, you know, just the inconsistency, it's just frustrating over the last couple of weeks. I mean, you know, hopefully they realize what kind of experience it'll be if they do manage to get into the playoffs, and, you know, what kind of valuable lesson they can learn from it, as opposed to sitting and watching. Because, again, I'm of the group that you get into the playoffs, you learn, you know, you get that atmosphere, you get that desire, you get that taste in your mouth, and, you know, no tanking here. That's just ridiculous to sit there and think it's better off for a team to purposely lose just to try and get another young puppy in here that may or may not help you right away. I say you get the experience, you get these guys learning. That's how you build a team. That's how you build the proper chemistry. You know, how many teams have seriously come in and had their number one star lead them to a title over the last 20 years? I mean, if I remember correctly, I think Duncan's the only guy that did it. Duncan's the only top five lottery pick or whatever that came in and won a title with the team that drafted him. I mean, you know, LeBron had to leave to go team up with Wade and Bosh in Miami. You know, maybe Wade, but again, it wasn't like he was all by himself. You know, he had recruited LeBron and Bosh to come down and do it. So
Shaq from Magic.
Draft, you know, Shaq too. I mean, that was the other thing. You had Shaq in your prime. You know, building through the draft doesn't necessarily mean it's the best way to go about it. You need luck. You need that once-in-a-generation superstar to come out when you happen to get the top one or two picks. You need good front office moves. You need a good system. So I think the Celtics need to get in the playoffs, learn how to play at that intense level. You know, I mean, again, I don't care who they play in the playoffs. I think outside of Cleveland, they stand a chance of winning some games in the playoffs anyway. Get that experience under your belt. Come out next year. You know, get a couple guys in with the cap space. Get a couple better go-to guys. Get a decent big man. You know, even possibly a guy we saw tonight. I rave about him all the time because I want him. You know, throw the boat at DeAndre Jordan. See if you can get him to come in here. Change that defensive mindset so now that guys like Olynyk and Sullinger and Tyler Zeller don't have to worry about trying to be a defensive stalwart in the back. Now you have somebody to protect you back there. That trickles down to the perimeter defense, which is our strength. It's just to make the whole team better, get a couple shooters in here, and see where to go from there.
Yeah, you know, the thing I've mentioned on these post-game shows in the past is I've said that the Celtics right now, and as I mentioned, they're fifth in the NBA in assists, which shows that there is a system in place that is being put together, as we can see. And if you look, like we've said, down the road in the future with this squad in Boston, I've said this on previous shows about the Boston Celtics, and it's been interesting to hear the change in opinions over the months as the season's gone on. You know, early on in the year, the Celtics looked like they were still, I mean, as we know, they're still in a rebuilding mode. But from the same perspective, they have grown into this team that has become a fringe playoff team, now potentially an eighth spot team in the postseason. And it's getting to a point now where they are on that cusp of they just need one guy. And the one thing I've mentioned on these postgame shows in the past is I've said all this team really needs to do in the offseason, and this offseason is crucial for the Boston. I think this is, if there is one team in the NBA that needs to have one crucially solid, outstanding offseason, it's the Boston Celtics. And the reason being, this whole team, if they stay together, I'm not saying everyone's going to stay together because of this, as we've seen this entire year, from the beginning of the year to now, it has been a complete flux of roster moves, which isn't a shock, but the system is proving to work. And I think they're starting to get a system of guys that they know that they can lean on for the future and that they can ultimately produce as time goes on. But what needs to happen, at least this offseason for sure, all these core guys right now need to put in a solid work ethic over the offseason, because at the end of the day, the offseason work ethic is a huge factor into coming into the next season. On top of that, like you just mentioned, and I was just going to bring that up, bringing in a one, maybe two, you know, an A-level type star, or maybe even a B, C-level type star, a guy who's right there, you know, or two B-level stars, something, a go-to guy or a package of guys that can create something when it comes to stretches of games, because that's the one thing they're lacking. And if you watch this team all year, it's like they can hang during the game, or, you know, a night like tonight was kind of obviously just, you know, this, I don't know what was going on, really. I mean, I just saw a team that really wasn't playing well. Also, they ran into a buzzsaw, and the Clippers, they've won 8 in a row now. So that's a different story. But anyway, the point is this team comes into the offseason, they make a solid draft pick, they get a solid offseason under their belt, they sign a big free agent or two packaging guys that can create something, and Brad Stevens will have another season under his belt. Like you said, this team needs to get into the postseason this year just for that experience factor, just to understand what it's like to play late into April. Doesn't matter if they play Cleveland or they play Atlanta. If they play one of those teams, they're going to find a way to get into the – they're going to find a way down the road to understand. It's like, okay, postseason basketball is about matchups. It's not a – system. It's about matchups. It's kind of like baseball. Like, baseball's coming right around the corner, by the way. But it's just like baseball. What guy can hit well against a certain pitcher? Well, what guy on the Boston Celtics can play well against a particular bench guy or a role player or a star player? Or how well on defense can he play? How well can Avery Bradley play a guy like, you know, Dwayne Wade in the postseason? I'm just throwing names out there. But how well can he play a guy at a postseason level night in and night out? Because in the regular season, you don't play teams every – you don't play the same team two, three, four nights in a row. That's a whole different adjustment. And just getting that – just getting your feet wet in that and understanding that, it'll make regular season games that much more worth it down the line. As we just mentioned, if this team can find a way to get into the postseason, it'll make those regular season games seem, not that they wouldn't seem unimportant, but they would seem important on another level, kind of like what we saw the Clippers. The Clippers have gotten their feet wet over the last 4 years going to the postseason for the last 4 years in a row, and look at what they do to teams that they're supposed to beat. They annihilate them. They annihilate them. They absolutely dominate and know how to play in the regular season. They know what it takes to have an important stretch down the road to make it seem like, you know, we want to get into the postseason. We want to win. We don't want to just make it. We want to win. Boston obviously is at that point where they just want to make it. And then hopefully as they get their feet wet, they get a good off season. Brad Stevens understands what it's like to play in the playoffs. He understands he now has a full season, couple seasons under his belt. And he has one solid draft pick, and they find one superstar. They'll find a way to become that 45, 50-win team. I'm not saying they'll be a 50-win team next year. I'm not trying to be crazy. But they could be a 45-win team next year and make a run like similar to what the Milwaukee Bucks are doing right now. You could see that happen next year. It could easily be the case if they find a way to get into the postseason. Real quickly before we break down kind of the situation of what's going on in the playoffs, let's look at scores from around the league real quick. The important games that have happened today so far, because as we know, the Boston Celtics are battling for a playoff spot right now. They would be out of the postseason with their loss today. The Brooklyn Nets, they got a win over the Los Angeles Lakers 107-99. Brooklyn's now 32-40. Brooke Lopez, 30 points, 11 rebounds, 107-99 win over the Los Angeles Lakers. They've now won three straight. Brooklyn's looking a little bit better every single day. Deron Williams is starting to find a way to get this team going again. And the Brooklyn Nets, not that they're going to do anything in the, I don't think any team besides anything lower than the seventh seed in the East is really has a real viable chance of doing much. But it's that experience that we're talking about for the Boston Celtics to get in is the key. And chance, obviously, they're only a half game out right now. But the Brooklyn Nets won today, and they're now 32-40. They've won three in a row. Hopefully, Boston tomorrow night when they play a team like Charlotte, who's off today, they can find a way to get themselves back into that conversation. Indiana, they played again today as well. Indiana's playing the Mavericks right now. It's tied 89-89 about halfway through the fourth quarter. The game probably won't be over by the time we're done with the show, but the point is Indiana's in a tight one with them, and they've been playing well. Obviously Paul George is going to be back in the rotation here shortly, and they're going to try and make that run to get into the postseason as well. Another important game tonight as well, Detroit and Miami. Dwayne Wade coming back, playing like the Flash we used to see about 10 years ago. 40 points for Dwayne Wade and a 109-102 victory for the Miami Heat. They're now 34-39. They're a solid spot in the seventh seed right now. They're two games up on, they're about a game and a half up on the eighth spot, Brooklyn Nets. And obviously, like I said, Charlotte, Detroit with that loss, it looks like they're done. They're on the fringe, but it looks like they're pretty much done. So now it looks like a four-team race for the eighth spot in Brooklyn, Boston, Indiana, and Charlotte. And as I just said, Boston plays Charlotte tomorrow night, 7 p.m. You've got to tune into that one. There's only nine games left in the regular season. Mike, what is your – I mean, knowing what's going on around the league right now, what is your take on this playoff scenario coming down the stretch here with about 2 weeks left in the regular season with Brooklyn, Boston, Indiana, and Charlotte? What do you see from these four teams? I mean, outside of Boston, what do you see from those three teams, Brooklyn, Indiana, and Charlotte, that the Boston Celtics should be aware of if they're going to get the, find a way to get into that eight?
Well, I mean, if I'm being honest, if you look at each team, if Paul George can somehow manage to come back and get into like somewhat of a rhythm and become healthy, well, Indiana, even if they're at the seventh or eighth seed, they're not that bad of a team. You know, I mean, you really have to take that into consideration when you look at Indiana. If they have Paul George for the playoffs, even 80% of what he was before, they're probably a top team in the East anyway. So you could see them, if they make the eighth seed but they have Paul George, I could see Indiana beating Atlanta. You know, if for some reason they manage to sneak up to the seventh seed and it works out where Indiana gets to play Cleveland but they have a healthy Paul George, it wouldn't shock me one bit to see Indiana beat Cleveland just because they have size inside, they have talent, they have athleticism on the wings. You know, I mean, however, it is all dependent on what happens with Paul George. I mean, Charlotte, they're kind of a disappointing team. You know, everybody thought Lance Stephenson was going to be the guy to put them over the top. But, you know, Charlotte's going to go with how well Al Jefferson plays. If Al Jefferson can be a dominant inside player and kind of get them 30-15, you know, on any given night, especially in a playoff series where you're playing the same team, that's what Charlotte's going to need. They're going to have to get Al Jefferson to come out and pretty much just be the dominant inside force that he can be. Brooklyn, I don't know. There's just something unimpressive about Brooklyn to me. I just, you know, I mean, I mean, Brooklyn is us with pretty much a go-to guy. That's, you know, that's pretty much what it is. I don't think that necessarily they have a lot of top-end talent. I mean, I think Brook Lopez, when he's healthy, is one of the top five centers in the NBA, but you never know when he's going to be healthy. Joe Johnson, even at an advanced age, is probably better of a number one option than anybody that we have on our roster. But again, when you think about that, what does that really say about them? That they're in a struggle, they're in a playoff race against us, who don't have, you know, some of the individual talent that they have, and they're struggling. So, I don't know. I mean, I think what it's going to come down to is, you know, again, consistency. Who plays the most consistent basketball over these last few weeks of the season? And I think, not to put any extra added pressure on this team, but tomorrow's a must-win game. I mean, every game is a must-win game when you think about it. But especially now at this time of the year, tomorrow night's game against Charlotte could be that game that makes or breaks our season. I really do believe that. I think that's what you're going to see. If they can win that tomorrow, kind of sneak back into that eighth spot, knock Charlotte down another peg, give themselves a little bit of confidence, move into this last eight or nine game stretch, that could be huge for them going into the playoffs. I mean, you know, they're probably not going to catch Miami because I think they're two or three games behind them no matter what, with Miami holding the tiebreaker. However, you know, you sneak into that eighth spot. I think Atlanta pretty much sealed up the number one seed in the East. You know, hold on to that spot and head into the playoffs knowing that you're going to play an Atlanta team that is, you know, probably a better version of what we are, and it's going to be a competitive series.
If you'd like to call in, the phone number is 347-215-7771. Again, playoff conversation here on the Celtics postgame show against the Celtics versus the Clippers in the Boston Garden. Again, a loss tonight, 119-106. Again, the last time the Boston Celtics will play a team outside of their conference. It's been an odd year for the Celtics. Like I said, the beginning of the year was kind of one of those years where it was like, hey, if they make the postseason, it'll be great success if they make it. Now it's like, if they make it, we want them to make it obvious. We want the Celtics to win the championship every year. That's what Boston Celtics are all about. They're all about championships. But at the same time, it's like coming into this year, we expected the rebuilding process of what to see. And tonight was one of those games where it was like, I mean, if you saw it from the perspective of talent, you understood that obviously the Clippers have way more talent on their team than the Boston Celtics. But at the same time, the way they played was a frustrating one. You kind of answered this question earlier about the playoffs. I wanted to just kind of bring it up, and I want to give you my take before I let you go. The thing about Blog Talk Radio, if those of you who don't know who are listening live or listening to the podcast, the delay is brutal. So when Mike and I talk, I would love to jump in. There are multiple times where I want to jump like a grasshopper and just like comment and make a comment. The problem is the delay is so brutal that if I were to jump in, we would just turn into this like, what, but you go. No, you go. Like, that's what would happen. I've done it multiple times on here. It's brutal. If we had a better format, we would have debate radio all day, and it would make for fantastic quality content. But we can't because of Blog Talk Radio's delay. The point is what you brought up a point about, it doesn't matter who we really play as long as we get in. You brought up the point right before I got into the whole, you know, talking about the you know, what the Celtics have done this year. If they get the eighth seed, they'd play Atlanta because Atlanta has locked down the one seed in the East. But if they get the seventh seed, they would play Cleveland. Now, here's the thing I would say. What was it? Was it 2007? Was it 2007 that the Golden State Warriors played the Dallas Mavericks? That was the year that the Dallas Mavericks were, you know, everyone was saying they're like the best team in the NBA. Dirk Nowitzki won the MVP. You know, that was the year that everyone was riding the Dallas Mavericks bandwagon, you know. And as we know, Golden State and Steven Jackson and Baron Davis and the boys, they all found a way to pull out an upset over the Dallas Mavericks in a very, very exciting fashion. Now, when it comes to matchups, like you said, Atlanta is probably a better version of the Boston Celtics. I mean, looking at the Atlanta Hawks, I mean, this team this year, they had a fantastic stretch from about Thanksgiving all the way up until about mid-February. They were one of the best teams in the NBA. And yes, they're up there in the top five in assists. They play great basketball. But here's the thing. If the Celtics can find a way to match up and play great defense against this team, who would not be the ones to say that this Atlanta Hawks team wouldn't have a tough time playing the Celtics squad? I mean, think about it. The Celtics have Isaiah Thomas. Yes, the Atlanta Hawks have a pretty solid defensive strategy, but it's not like they're anything special. They really don't have a go-to guy either. I mean, think about this. When they went undefeated in January, the Atlanta Hawks, they had five guys win Player of the Month. Why'd the NBA do that? I don't know. We're turning into this society where everyone's got to get a gold medal or everyone's got to get some form of a ribbon for participation. So we're turning into that. But outside of that part, the Atlanta Hawks had five guys. Why? Because they don't necessarily have a go-to guy. What do the Boston Celtics have a problem with? They don't necessarily have a go-to guy. But there is one thing the Atlanta Hawks would have when it comes to the matchup edge. It would be the big men. I mean, just realistically, Paul Millsap is a fundamental machine. You can get rebounds. He's a great overall player. He's not a superstar, but he's a good player. He's a very, very solid player. He's a good piece to the puzzle. Al Horford, fantastic piece to the puzzle. Should have been an all-star, in my opinion, but up in the air kind of all-star thing, you know. And then there are other players who they have. What was his name? Oh man, Jeff Teague, fantastic player this year, playing well. Who's to say that Avery Bradley can't shut him down? I mean, he plays good enough defense to play well enough on him to match up. Isaiah Thomas can score with him, you know. And then you got guys like Kyle Korver. Where yes, he's improved his game. Yes, he's gotten better. But is he really been that great? I mean, yeah, he was good this year. He shoots well from three. But outside of that, it's like, what else does he do? And then they got, you know, they got Carroll on there, Damari Carroll. I mean, their team is filled with, it's a lot like the Boston Celtics. No one thought the Atlanta Hawks would do what they're doing right now. Because, unfortunately, what happens in the NBA unfortunately, what happens is we look at preseason. We look at teams based on how they would play in the postseason. The regular season is a whole different brand of basketball. The way teams play in the regular season, for those of you that just aren't aware of, I mean, we all know what postseason basketball looks like. It's amazing, and it's outstanding, and it's a completely different game from the regular season. The regular season, there's a lot of going through the motions. And what is the unfortunate event is the Atlanta Hawks play in been the worst conference in basketball for the last 10-plus years, and they play a lot of teams that, unfortunately, when they go through the motions, they're terrible. When the Atlanta Hawks go through the motions, they might play with a little bit more of an edge. Why? Because their head coach used to be part of the San Antonio Spurs, which means that they're going to bring it every single night, whether they have second-string starters coming in when guys are hurt or whether they have guys who are wearing suits, you know, guys that are, you know, 15th men on the roster coming in playing. They're going to play as hard as they can every night. In the postseason, everybody plays hard every night. Everybody's going to play hard, their best basketball every single night. And when we see the Boston Celtics play their best brand of basketball, they can compete with anybody. And yes, it is a regular season thing. Again, and it kind of goes into that, you know, are they doing this because it's the regular season, or are they doing this because this is who they are? So there's kind of that toss-up, but only we'll know if they get into the postseason. Let's be honest. Matchup-wise, Cleveland would annihilate Boston. Boston, if Boston played Cleveland, LeBron James would probably average 45 points a night. He should. He won't, because he's LeBron James and he's never been in a dunk contest, which tell you that he doesn't actually try to elevate his game to the point that he should. Because, you know, again, but the point is, LeBron James is amazing. LeBron James is amazing. He would annihilate Boston. There's no one on Boston that can compete with LeBron James. There's no one who can compete with Kyrie Irving on Boston. There's no one on Boston that can compete with Kevin Love. That team would annihilate Boston. With Atlanta, though, you could see a chance where some games could be won. And what that does for the Celtics, and as we know, if you're a Celtics fan, a realistic Celtics fan, and you understand where this team is in their process, they might not beat the Atlanta Hawks in the first round. Could they? Absolutely. But they might not. But it's that matchup and that confidence and that getting your feet wet that we've mentioned earlier on in the show that would give that Celtics squad going into the offseason saying, hey, we beat this Atlanta team once, twice in the postseason. What makes us think we can't compete with everybody else if we get that go-to guy? If we get that guy that, you know, that we can get that guy that we can lean on late in the game. If we get that extra piece, we put together a tough, hard offseason and work ourselves and get better as a team and as individual players, what makes us think that we can't become a 45-50 win team here in the next year or so? And be a legitimate Eastern Conference contender, which I'm not going to say is an easy thing, because I think sometimes the Eastern Conference beats themselves up, but at the same time, they have been more of a relatively weaker conference just because of compared to the West. The West is just ridiculous. But on that same token, if they can find themselves thinking that way heading into the offseason, they might find themselves, again, like I mentioned earlier, like a Milwaukee squad, where they're finding themselves hovering around 500, and then sometime late in the year, they become a 45-win team, and they find themselves in a 6-5, maybe even fourth spot in the Eastern Conference. Again, you mentioned kind of it doesn't matter who they play in the postseason, Mike. Realistically, what do you see the potential of what this Boston squad could do if they have a matchup either between Cleveland or Atlanta? Like, what do you see could happen?
Well, I mean, I agree with you, and obviously some of my Homer reasons was come out, but there's sure. No way that the Celtics would play perfect basketball, shoot the ball at an 80% clip, and they still wouldn't beat Cleveland, because that's not in the best interest of the company. Let's just put it that way. There's no way that they would be allowed to beat Cleveland no matter how well they played. You know, nobody likes an upset. Right. Everybody likes seeing the stars on TV. And if it came down to it, there's zero chance that the NBA would let the Boston Celtics, with a collection of twos and threes, go out there and beat LeBron James and Kyrie and that team, who is pretty much made for TV and equals ratings. However, if the Celtics would play the Atlanta Hawks, who, like you said, they do have some good guys, their biggest strengths, like some of their more talented players like Millsap and Horford and DeMar Carroll, are they really the kind of guys that are going to go out there and dominate what we have? I mean, they don't have a lot of size inside. They don't have that dominant big man that gives us absolute fits. Their big men are like our big men. They prefer to stay in the perimeter. They prefer to, you know, sometimes shoot threes like Millsap does. You see Al Horford, he's more of a a 15 to 18 foot shooting big man. He's not a low post presence. They don't really have anybody like that. Teague's a good point guard, but Teague isn't the kind of take over the game guy where, they can rely on him to carry them through games and a series. I think that him and Isaiah Thomas would be a pretty good matchup. But again, that's the kind of point guard where he's so ball dominant that Avery Bradley could easily shut him down. So I think, it'll come down to a couple intangibles, how well Brad Stevens adjusted towards what their coach was going to do. Because like you mentioned, he comes from the Spurs, comes from a great system, that Popovich tree. A couple X-factor guys, like how would some of our bench guys come in? How would Marcus Smart handle being in the playoffs as a rookie? How would we be able to defend Kyle Korver? Because he's the one guy where you could be up 15, Kyle Korver gets into a rhythm, and all of a sudden now you're looking like a three-point game just simply because he's such a good shooter. You can't allow him to get into a rhythm. So you got to pretty much make sure that you stick on Kyle Korver and prefer to see other guys try to beat you. Again, giving up two is much better than giving up three. It's the new NBA. That's just the way everything is. I could actually see us beating Atlanta in a seven-game series. I could see us taking them to six or seven games, beating them in a series, as opposed to beating Cleveland in a series, which would absolutely destroy the ratings that the NBA craves so much.
It would be I think that would be the biggest upset in sports history if the Boston Celtics beat the Cleveland Cavs, which is hilarious because 40 years ago, if we were saying that, people would be jumping out of their seats and having heart attacks. No pun intended to the guy who unfortunately had a heart attack today during the game with about 5 minutes left in the Boston Clippers game. Again, there was a great point made tonight as I was listening. About beginning of the third quarter, I'd say probably right before, right at the end of the half, or the second half was getting started. It's a great point. The Clippers were basically at that point when they were up by 20, they're basically perfecting their third and fourth realm of their team, whereas Boston is still trying to perfect their first realm. I mean, both these teams are on different levels, and if you watch the game tonight, as the Celtics lost 119-106, trust me, the game was not as close as it seemed. Like I said, I don't know if you heard this earlier, Mike, I made the analogy, it was as if the Celtics came to a party late at around 1:15, 2 in the morning, and everyone was closing up the party, or at least, kind of chilling out, just not really, the party was pretty much over, and the Celtics were like, we're here to party! And the Celtics, all the main party gangers had gone home already. And then all of a sudden, Doc Rivers had to call them back and bring them back, and they finally shut the party down and closed them out. That's kind of how this game felt, from that perspective, at least on a talent-wise and how the game had been played. And that's how it happened tonight. Again, the Clippers winning 119-106. Other scores in the NBA real quick before we start to move on out of here. Again, the Pacers, they now just finished out the Mavericks 104-99. You talk about Rajon Rondo, a guy, 10 assists tonight, but Rajon Rondo really not impacting the Mavericks as much as we all thought was going to happen. I mean, I did not see this happening. I thought Rajon Rondo was going to find a way to make that team a much better team than they are. And right now, as it stands, with the Spurs winning tonight and a win over the Grizzlies, the second seeded, the quietest second seeded team in the NBA, I think ever. I have never seen a team in the Memphis Grizzlies get no pub. I mean, compared to Cleveland, Cleveland gets all the hype, and the Grizzlies have barely been talked about. It is fascinating. And the Spurs, 103-89 over the Grizzlies tonight. Kawhi Leonard, 25 points, 10 rebounds. Zach Randolph, another great ho-hum, 20-13 by Zach Randolph. And the Spurs win. They're now in the sixth spot in the West, and the Dallas Mavericks lose. They're now in the seventh spot. You talk about a team that is still – this is the ridiculousness of the Western Conference. A team in the Dallas Mavericks – excuse me. A team in the Dallas Mavericks has an incredible bench. They're 45-28. And they're the seventh seed in the West. In the Eastern Conference, 45-28 gets you the 3 seed right now. That just let that sink in. That's the seventh seed. Oklahoma City, who's in the eighth spot, 41-32, which I think my opinion, the MVP. We'll talk about that in a second, Mike. I want to get your opinion on that, my MVP race. This is ridiculous. The MVP race is fascinating. But the Oklahoma City Thunder, 41-32, they would be the fourth seed. They'd be right there, the fifth seed, right ahead of Washington. So it's just the disparity is there. But anyway, the point is Dallas, the Indiana Pacers win. They're now 32-41, I believe. If that's again, they win. Yeah, 32-41, and they're right there again. Boston is they're hovering. Indiana's hovering. They're right there, and so we got that coming for. Yeah, they got that coming as well. And again, Paul George is going to come back within the next week or so, and they could make a quick run and potentially sneak on into the postseason. They play a team like Atlanta. The tables will turn quickly. The Pacers will easily. I think they could easily beat the Atlanta Hawks if they get into the postseason as an eighth seed. I think they'd beat them easily. That's no disrespect to Atlanta, what they've done all year. They've been, again, an outstanding squad, and they had an unbelievable run from about post-Thanksgiving all the way up until mid-February. They were unbelievable, but that's just the regular season. The postseason, the Pacers have matchup problems for days. Other scores outside of what, outside of impacting the Boston Celtics, the Houston Rockets tonight, 99-91 over the Washington Wizards. I saw so much promotion for this game. It was utterly ridiculous. And it was just, another ho-hum game for James Harden, 24 points, 6 assists, no big deal for him. Another MVP candidate there, John Wall with 12 assists, couldn't get it done there. But outside of that, John Wall's had an outstanding year, 25 points, 12 assists, just crazy stuff by a point guard. The Minnesota Timberwolves, they can't quite get it done against the Pelicans. The Pelicans get it done 110-188. The Brow, 28-9 for him tonight. Anthony Davis, if you don't know the Brow. And then Cleveland finding a way to just sleepwalk their way against Philadelphia, 87-86. LeBron James gets 20 points, 11 rebounds, and 6 assists. And so that's pretty much what's going on in the NBA. Real quickly before we head out of here, again, the Boston Celtics losing 119-106. If you'd like to call in and chime in about this conversation, the MVP conversation, real quickly before we head, I'm fascinated by what you think, Mike, on the MVP. I know you cover the Boston Celtics. I know we're here a part of CLNS Radio here on BTR on Blog Talk Radio. But this MVP race, I think, in my opinion, over these next 2 weeks, once the whole March Madness is done, which, I mean, to this point, it pretty much is. I mean, we're in the Final Four stage now, and obviously the national championship is next Monday. But this MVP race is one of the craziest MVP races I can ever remember. And these next 2 weeks, when it comes to that MVP race, are going to be absolutely scrutinized to the very end. Steph Curry has been the best player on the best team all year, a team that could potentially win 65 games this year in the Golden State Warriors. He has been the man all year for that team. Yes, Klay Thompson has had some flashes of brilliance, but overall, Steph Curry has been the man. The Houston Rockets, they have been a mid-level, now they're in the two spot in the Western Conference, they're right there with Memphis in the two spot, the half game around hovering 2-3 spot. And James Harden is the guy leading the charge with an injured Dwight Howard, and obviously the rest of that team is not. But without James Harden, that team is nowhere near the top of the Western Conference, and they might even be hovering where New Orleans and Phoenix are, hanging outside of the Western Conference. James Harden is right there. He's easily, I wouldn't say he's the best two guard in the league, because both ways, because Klay Thompson, scoring-wise, definitely easily the best offensive shooting guard in the NBA by far is James Harden. And then you got another guy in Oklahoma City who I don't really need to mention because he's my favorite for the MVP, and Russell Westbrook. Just 9 triple-doubles this year by himself alone. 9 triple-doubles, and at one point he had, I think it was like 6 or 7 in a row. This guy, without him, and now Kevin Durant's considered out for the entire year, 41-32. Without him, that team is no, as we saw early on in the year when he was out, that team is nothing without a superstar. They're nothing. They're absolute garbage. And Russell Westbrook has found a way to keep this team afloat and in the postseason race. If this team makes the postseason, how can you not consider him? And then, obviously, the king, LeBron James. This team, at one point in time of the year, they were 19-20 heading into the 2015, right before the new year. 19-20. And they have rattled off now. 29 wins. They've gone 29-7 over their last 36 games. You talk about a run that will make that would make a king bluff. He is the king. And again, 48-20. They're right there. They're gonna be the two seed. They're ahead of Chicago by 3 games with about 9 games to go. What, God, Mike? who do you think is going to be the MVP? I really don't know now. I have no idea.
Well, I mean, I understand that the media is going to want to try and make it a four-person race. But quite frankly, I think it's James Harden's MVP to lose, and I think Steph Curry is kind of a victim of the fact that he doesn't have to be in the fourth quarter as much. So I think it's going to be Harden number one, Curry number two, and then after that, it really doesn't matter much. So, but if my phone's working properly, I think there's another guy that we might be able to ask his opinion on the MVP as well as the opinion on what happened tonight, because I believe we actually have CLNS Radio's Jared Weiss on the line. He's been trying to send me messages, so I'm not
sure. Is he the 617? Is he the 617?
617.
All right, let's get him on here. Jared, are you there, Jared? Oh, man, my computer is pooping. All right, Jared, are you there? Jared, you there?
You hear me. Sorry about that.
No, no problem. We have another guy on the line, too. We'll get you on shortly here, caller. But, Jared, who do you think's the MVP? Seriously.
So, long discussion about this with some people tonight. And I'm still in the Steph Curry camp right now. Unless James Harden or Russell Westbrook does something really, truly miraculous to separate themselves down the stretch here. And James Harden is definitely making that push right now. I do have to give it to Curry because of the overall body of work. You can jump in because it sounds like you got something you want to say.
You want to know something? Okay. I am so torn now because of what Russell Westbrook's done all year, and I'm also a huge Russell Westbrook fan, so I'm kind of a homer on that. I'm not a Thunder fan. I'm a diehard Spurs fan, but with what Russell Westbrook's been doing over the last month and a half is just awe-inspiring. It's something that is just it's absolutely incredible. I actually favorited James about a month ago. If you would have talked to me, I would have told you James Harden is the man all the way because of him. Without him on that squad, without him playing the way he's playing, putting up 40 and 10 every night, you know, like he was doing against Phoenix about a month ago before the All-Star break, this guy was clearly in my mind the MVP. But now knowing that Russell Westbrook is where he's at and knowing what he's been doing to carry his squad just to get into the postseason, it's ridiculous. But at the same time, you cannot discount Steph Curry and his consistency of that team. Yes, I understand what Mike's saying completely, that he's been on a team that's been so good. They're 60-13 with about, you know, eight games to go in the regular season. Nine games left to go in the regular season. This team has been the best team all year long. And he has been the best player on the best team all year long. And then you can make the case for a guy like LeBron James with a brand new team where they went through a ton of – I mean, 3 months ago, this Miami Heat team was going through the Cleveland Cavs with how quick they've come from being so average for like 2 months to now they're legitimately that title contender that we all – thought was going to happen. I don't know if there's any other player that could ever come from a team like Miami who went to four straight Eastern Conference championships and lead a new team with, yes, talented Kyrie Irving, talented Kevin Love, but two guys that are unproven at being successful in the NBA. I mean, they're successful when it comes to like being a proven when it comes to the team atmosphere, you know, and they have proven that and they have made that. LeBron has been the clear-cut leader of that. That is like, who do we pick? And I am on Westbrook's side right now, but I can totally see where you're coming from with James Harden. I can see where you come from with Steph Curry, and I totally understand the Steph Curry angle on that as well.
All right. Let me try to break that down one by one, and I only got about 5 minutes left, so I'll do this quickly. But
no problem.
As far as LeBron's concerned, I'm going to tack him off the ballot because he was solid in the first half of the year. Don't get me wrong. For his standards, he was solid. Right. Second half of the year, he's been great. But when you've got a guy that is playing in the second half of the year on the level that the other four MVP candidates have been playing all year, and I don't know if I'd say Westbrook is in that camp as far as all your consistency, but you can't really put him in that conversation with those guys because Harden and Curry have been playing on the peak level that LeBron's been playing at the entire year. As far as Westbrook through Curry, a really good way that you could measure it is when you're talking about player value, it's how does that team play without him? Or another way to look at it is, how does that team play when they just take away pretty much everything else the team has and it's all on him? And Russell Westbrook has been a living experiment of that philosophy this year. And you've seen that team go from what's a top of the Eastern Conference or Western Conference team to a middle of the pack Western Conference team. And while he's put his numbers of 30-10 and about 9 rebounds a game over the past 2 months are probably the best numbers I think I've ever seen in my life, as I'm a little young to remember MJ's really amazing statistical seasons. But it's probably the best that I've seen. They're still not escaping the bottom of the Western Conference. They've now gotten themselves 2 games ahead of New Orleans, so it looks like they're going to be able to get in there, although it's far from over. But they weren't able to escape that 8 seed. And, of course, he has dealt with more adversity as an MVP candidate than anybody really in recent memory has. I mean, it's amazing how much that team has lost. They've lost 2 All-NBA players, the defending MVP. And then so just quickly there, the other thing is just the win differential there is, sure, Westbrook's been amazing, but Steph Curry, who is not the entire team compared to Westbrook as it is with the Warriors, but he's still their key player, and he still is, I'd say, 50% of that squad. He has them 20 games better than the Thunder, and I think that's the big difference.
Yeah.
The Warriors, who are basically at the same level as what the Thunder would be without if they had Durant and Ibaka healthy all year, they're 20 games better than Oklahoma. That's a pretty remarkable difference.
And real quickly, Jared, we got a call on the line. I'll get to him in just a second. And you made when you say that one thing, that the Golden State Warriors are 20 games better than the Oklahoma City Thunder, that's when it's like you read a paragraph in a book, that like Russell Westbrook is a paragraph and then Steph Curry is a book of the entire 2014. Do you see what I'm saying? He has been on the best, like clearly no debate, best team in the NBA all season long. And he's been the best player. And it's like, when we remember this year 10 years from now, we're going to see that the Golden State Warriors won 65, 66, 67 games, and we're going to be like, damn, who was the best player on that team? Oh, Steph Curry? Okay, I can handle that. You know what I mean? Like, you can rationally understand that's why he won MVP, because that team was so good.
Yeah, and, you know, before we go on to the quotes from the locker room, it's important to note that the difference 20 games or so in record between Golden State and Oklahoma, that's actually slightly more than the difference between the Celtics and the Cleveland Cavaliers right now. So that maybe that'll help quantify the remarkable performance of the Warriors. Now let's just quickly go to the locker room now, because that is what the locker report is for, right? I think the Doc obviously was the focal point of tonight. He talked about just the team taking care of business in the end. The Clippers almost blew everything there. He said that they did a good job, and he doesn't think that they've been a great travel team for the most part this year. And in big games, they seem to play well on the road, but they're up and down. But he thought the guys had an amazing focus when they left, and you could just tell that they were going to take this trip very seriously. And when it means leaving L.A. And he really commended his team for just absolutely dominating early on. And, you know, of course, in the fourth quarter there, they took out the starters, and Gigi Datome single-handedly changed the face of the NBA by hitting a few threes and making it actually a competitive game again. But they were able to put the starters back in, and even with the Hacker Jordan strategy, LA was able to hang on, mostly because the Celtics blew 2 offensive rebounds on those missed free throws, which was pretty remarkable. It was a bit of a shooting yourself in the foot there, where they had everything was going right for them. They were pulling off the Hacker Jordan comeback, and then they allow for 2 offensive rebounds on this free throws. That was pretty fatal.
Well, I mean, for Doc to say that they took this road trip very seriously, I hope they did. They annihilated the Knicks. They annihilated the Sixers. And they annihilated the Celtics. And look who they play Tuesday night on TNT. They play Golden State, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, 10:30 p.m. Eastern on TNT, nationally televised game. You talk about one of the biggest rivalries now, I think, in the NBA, Clippers and Golden State. Those teams hate each other. And for that game to be going on, they better be coming into that game prepared, because the way they played tonight, they could give Golden State a serious run for their money. Jared, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, well, Brad Stevens, we'll finish these quotes off before we go to the caller. But Brad Stevens actually said that they got manhandled tonight, which I thought was pretty fascinating, considering that they were able to make that comeback. But he was absolutely right, especially the way that DeAndre Jordan was just punishing these guys with those unbelievable dunks that he had throughout the game. I was talking to someone who was at their first, I think they're one of their first Celtics games, and I was telling them they were lucky that usually blowouts aren't this exciting, but even though it's a blowout, there were so many highlight reel plays by DeAndre Jordan. Chris Paul was phenomenal as usual. And Chris Paul has been a model of consistency, and he said that their offensive execution has been amazing, but that they also defend, that they hold a couple teams in 16-point quarters, 19-point quarters, and that's something that they have to keep doing defensively. And he also credited that a big difference for them has been that their ball movement is that they're passing up good shots for great shots, and that's a mantra that Doc Rivers had forever here at Boston. You know, you might think you have a solid shot, but there's always someone like Ray Allen, or tonight it was J.J. Redick, open in the corner, open on the elbow, and they could just making that extra pass to get that wide-open shot was really crucial for them tonight, and that's why they got out to such a huge lead early on.
Yeah, if there was one game that defined this entire game, and it better be on YouTube or some form of a video site out there, there was a dunk with about 2 minutes left in the first half by DeAndre Jordan where Chris Paul was driving the right side of the basket. He just threw it up over his head, and DeAndre Jordan, there was thankfully no one was underneath him because I think they would have gotten, like, seriously hurt. DeAndre Jordan just had his, I kid you not, his armpit was, like, over the rim, and he just came down and slammed the ball completely through the hoop, and the whole Clippers bench was like trying to hold each other's back, and they fell. You talk about an absolute just dynamo of a basketball play. Go check that out. About 2 minutes left in the first half of this ball game tonight, DeAndre Jordan with a serious alley-oop dunk from Chris Paul. It was absolutely incredible. The bench, watch the bench reaction too. It's absolutely fascinating. Anything else, Jared?
No, that's it for me tonight. Thanks for having me.
All right, Jared. Thank you so much, man. All right. We've got a caller, a 415 caller here. Been waiting on the line for a while. Caller, how you doing? Let's see if we
get it. Yeah, this is Franco back again from San Francisco. I just had a
yeah.
– I mean, there's no question. I mean, look, LeBron James' hairline's not coming back. James Harden's not getting any prettier. And as I've seen, Russell Westbrook could definitely use a facelift. They haven't found a face of the franchise as pretty as that little the angel assassin they got over here in the 415. On top of that, you talk about all the commercials that are going in to pumping this up. The fact that they're opening up a whole new stadium here in San Francisco and all of Oakland is about to get deactivated. I mean, this shit going back, you know, this is like Mike Munger style, but like all the chips, you got the best coach with Steve Kerr. Almost you got the like, most improved or defensive player of the year with DeAndre Green. I mean, it's just too much. And then the best record and then all the records they've been breaking. It's just too, it's almost like, this is almost like when the Celtics got together in 08. And like some Bulls, you know, kind of stuff. When you got the best coach, you got the best record, you got the best player, and he makes this look so easy. How many times does he make people look? They're coming out of their shoes trying to stay.
I think the most amazing part about what's going on in Golden State is that I don't think it's been as easy as it looks, because over the last couple of years, this team has started to become a more prominent franchise than I think people are giving it credit. But I agree with you. Out there in the Yay, they got a team 60-13 that is just absolutely just making it bonkers. I mean, yes, you got the San Francisco Giants out there, but there's this team in the out there in Golden State. They're playing unbelievable basketball. So, Franco, is it safe to say that if you had
it organically too, because they weren't handed. They weren't like LeBron. He was handed that team. You know, this team came up from the bottom up, and they, you know, and they
very
worked
true.
For it. They worked well to get together. And like it or not,
I wouldn't say that LeBron James was hand wrapped four straight Eastern Conference championships. That's not hand wrapped. Yes. He had Dwayne Wade.
Too,
yes, so. He had Chris. Yeah, and in Cleveland, he has Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, and I see your perspective, and I agree with you. I 100% agree with you that Golden State has had to build from literally a foundation of nothing and had to grow their players over time. I completely agree with you on that perspective, and I see where you're coming from. But I wanted to ask you this question, Franco. So let me guess, your stamp of approval of MVP this year is Steph Curry, correct?
All day.
All day.
All day.
Franco,
let me
understand.
Ask you a question here, man.
That's his name. I mean, like, when he shoots up something, it don't matter where he's at. Almost, like, 75% of you is like, that's going in. Don't matter where he's shooting from. And he's clowning.
Mike, go ahead.
There, you know?
Franco, let me ask you a question here, because I don't think Stephen Curry has done anything to not deserve the MVP, but the problem is when you have somebody like Steph Curry, who, again, doesn't always get the stat stuff in the fourth quarter because his team is so good, you could honestly say that could potentially hurt him in the MVP race. Whereas a guy like James Harden, he's been carrying that team not only just, offensively, but they don't have Dwight Howard. And that's a big thing that a lot of people haven't brought up, is that Dwight Howard is supposed to be, that other guy on that team. They've been doing all this without Dwight Howard, getting up to that 2-3 seed, without their second best player, without the defensive player of the year candidate, without their big man. Something like that could actually sway it towards him as far as the MVP goes. But you know what I like about your team, Franco? You know what I love about the Warriors? They kind of go against the grain where, yes, Curry was a lottery pick, but people forget he was the 7th pick in the draft. He actually got picked behind Ricky Rubio and Johnny Flynn. And Klay Thompson was the 16th pick in the draft out of Washington State. So he was kind of that mid-level first-round pick. They've built their team the right way, the way that I think that you can do it, and they've added the proper pieces through free agency, through trades. They haven't built it around that number one pick, that top three lottery superstar pick. So that's where I feel like Golden State doesn't get enough respect. If I'm being honest with you, I think that come playoff time, I still think it's going to come down to, Golden State, the Spurs, or Memphis. I think those are the only three legitimate teams that have a chance to win out of the West. It wouldn't shock me one bit if Golden State just runs through the playoffs, goes on to win the title, because I don't think there's anybody in the Eastern Conference, including Cleveland, that can hang with the Warriors. But I at least got to pay respect to that team and that player. I just think that,
Franco,
unfortunately, how good that team is, it could potentially hurt Stephen Curry.
I got one thing that your team needs to do this offseason. I got one checklist that your team needs to do this offseason. Yes, they've won 60 games. Yes, they're going to be the number one seed in the Western Conference. They're the best team in the NBA right now. But here's the problem they're going to have come postseason time when it comes to playing a team like the Spurs, when it comes to playing a team like Portland, when it comes to playing teams. They all have big men. The problem is they're big men. They have issues with Bogut. Bogut cannot compete with guys like Tim Duncan, guys like Splitter, guys that he can't do it. He can't do it with guys like that. But here's one thing you can do this offseason that can fix all of that. You go to Marc Gasol's house and you find a way to put a contract in front of his face that says, we want you because we're going to win titles if you come here. If Golden State finds a way to sign Marc Gasol, you can write off an NBA championship in 2016 automatically. Because if you get him, that's going to be Marc Gasol, Steph Curry, the Splash Brothers, and Marc Gasol. It's game over. Like, it's game over at that point. Like, you're going to be winning championships. You're going to be in a championship run year in and year out. Franco, is there anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Well, the whole league was giving themselves up on Curry when he had all those ankle problems. Klay Thompson was almost traded last year. A lot of these players that are on their team were forgotten from other people. Curry brought a lot of, Curry doesn't get enough credit for the way he's got these guys managed. They're big men, I'm not worried. They're going to be like, they just keep going in and out. They have fun going in and out because they know they got a consistent, and they're bigs that they got know how to roll and know how to pass. And you got players like DeAndre Green, they're just monsters, all over the place. He's almost like a poor man's Rodman, if you think about it, the way his energy is. I just feel like you're correct, though. If anybody could get Marc Gasol, kudos to you, a tip of the hat. It was a great conversation with you guys. I'm a Celtics fan, though, at heart. And these Celtics fans need to be proud about what they've done this season. The season's not even over yet. And looking forward, they need a big man. They need a Marc Gasol. That's the one thing they need, for real. And they'll be all right. But thank you guys for your time.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. Have a fantastic time. Matt, anything else you want to say before we get off the air here, man? This is a great show tonight. Again, Clippers win 119-106, extending their streak to 8 in a row, and the Celtics lose game number 73 of the season. Matt, anything else to say before we get out of here?
Well, just move on. You kind of put this one in the rear view, and you move on to tomorrow. Tomorrow night's game, in all actuality, is you know, probably the most important game, you know, moving forward. Every single game matters now. You can't take any game off. You know, all the cool cliches that you hear the players talk about on TV because they can't say what they really want to say, you know, kind of come into play right now. So just put this one in the rear view. The Bobcats aren't anywhere near the same level as the Clippers are. And shockingly enough, which, you know, something we never really got used to in Boston all that much, the Celtics are actually a really good team on the second night of back-to-backs these days, as opposed to what we saw when we had the older guys who were amazing on the first night, but the second night, they just, something seemed to happen, something seemed to struggle with them. They were just, they weren't very good on the second night of back-to-backs. So this team is very good. I think they can definitely take the Bobcats if they can just do a good way to neutralize Al Jefferson from, you know, going off and just kind of keep Kemba Walker in front of you. Make Kemba Walker actually have to play defense. It should be a winnable game. They can get back in the eighth spot, stay in that playoff hunt, not really hurt themselves all that much, and then move on from there. So.
All right. Well, we're done with the live edition of the show. The show is now over. We're in the podcast area. Thank you again for listening. If you are listening to the podcast, thank you again. Sorry if we cut you off on the live edition. But if you're listening to the podcast, thank you so much for listening. Have a fantastic day, and please watch that game tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern at Charlotte. Boston needs this game. They need to win. 9 games left in the regular season to get into the postseason. For CLNS Radio and everyone else on Celtics postgame, thank you again. My name is Chris, and Mike was on the other line. Thank you again for listening. Have a fantastic night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.